John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody. And boy, I tell you what, one of the great parts about doing 10 to 12, it's right in news time. It's right when things happening. And of course, you get instant reaction to all the news that's happening. Before we do this and get into the five biggest stories of the day, I got to give a shout out. I mean, again, it's like, this is not an advertisement. This is a thank you. And it's a thank you to CenturyLink because we had some issues with the ISDN line that I use here. And, make a call right at after doing the 17-15 hit with Brock and Salk and, with Mike and that. And then, they've jumped in and they have done an incredible job. My deepest thanks go out to Brian, to Steve, and all the technicians. They were able to come back at a very quick pace and figure out a very difficult thing to do to make sure that, got that ISDN line here in the house and be able to do the show. And so big shout out to CenturyLink. Not an advertisement. I got to thank them because they did incredible stuff, and they've always been able to do incredible stuff for me. So I just say that because, again, they went above and beyond. But let's go above and beyond right now with the five biggest stories of the day. The top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Breaking news this morning, just after Adam Schefter reported that the Cowboys offered a second-round pick to the Seahawks for Earl Thomas, and they declined. Ian Rappaport says that Earl is reporting to the Seahawks. Earl posted on his Instagram, "I've worked my whole life for this. I've never let my teammates, city, or fans down as long as I've lived, and don't plan on starting this weekend." With that being said, the disrespect has been well noted and will not be forgotten. Father Time may have an undefeated record, but best believe I plan on taking him into triple overtime when it comes to my career.
So, looks like Earl Thomas is going to report today and end the holdout. And Earl, smart move. Smart move. I mean, again, now you have, again, it was not a necessarily, it was, I think, still a waste of time and a waste of the money that you lost, the $427,000 as far as proration on your signing bonus and, the money that you lose in the $40,000. And they're going to uphold that and they're going to ask for that back. But now by you showing up and not missing a game check, or possibly missing a game check, they could take the tack and put you on the exempt list, which they might for 2 weeks. But again, I think what this comes down to now, it's time to make a trade. And you don't make a trade, I guess, when you're out of there or you don't get the right value. Still think that they'd like to get a number one pick for him. They're not going to get it. And Adam Schefter's now reporting, because it was reported yesterday around the Dallas area, that they had upped their offer to a 3, which may not be the best, but I think that's still fair. Now, if indeed the Cowboys have offered a second round pick and have been turned down, this is just a little bit of a negotiation, I think. And this is just my opinion on this, because you still have the grand scheme of things. I mean, you're talking about a future Hall of Fame candidate that is such a great player. He fits into a team right now in Dallas that has one of the youngest teams, one of the lower payrolls. And so, why not make this move? And so, again, until he shows up, which of course now he's saying he's going to be there, you can see that he's felt disrespected. He can be a little bit of a distraction and all that. Eliminate the distraction. Just make a trade. And so I think that's where it's probably going to go. Question's going to be, do you put Earl on the field? Do you put him on the active roster? What are you doing? And when you have a holdout, I mean, the guy comes back, the team has 2 weeks to sort it out and make their decision. Do you extend him? Well, unless he shows that he wants to be here, I say no. I mean, and so all you're doing is holding his place for a third-round compensatory in 2020. If you can do better than that, and even a third-round pick next year is better than a third compensatory, because remember, where the Cowboys are going to finish is going to determine which part of the round it's going to be. And also, at the compensatory pick, that's going to be, right down toward the bottom. So I would say, and that's 2020, you have to wait a year. If you had a second round pick, you fill the void for Dwayne Brown, and, you can kind of see if there's going to be a settlement, it'd just be, some swap of picks in whatever round. So it's like, okay, if you offer 2 in a better position in the fifth round, that could work out. But now my read, and this is my read, is that unless Earl shows and tells Pete Carroll, John Snyder, that I really, really, really want to stay a Seahawk, and you can see from his statement that he may not, then just make the move and do that. So again, I think Earl now has made the wise decision to come in. economically. He's not losing 1/17th right now of his $8.5 million signing, or his base salary. And so this is big news. And again, it's sad to see if they are going to trade him, but I think they need to. That's my opinion. And see what you think. At some point, we'll get your reaction to that, particularly if we don't take phone calls. And I don't think we're going to be able to do that today. We'll do it in text questions.
Number two.
Bird will let it wide. 8 to shoot. Bird heaves. Truth. Sue Bird. It is her night.
That was incredible. And the stories about Sue Bird, you know, literally, you know, catching parts of the game and all that. I mean, Phoenix had the lead most of the game. And it was about, 6:31 left. Phoenix, the Storm, led by 4 points. And then in the final 4 minutes, Sue Bird was incredible, scoring 14 of her 22 points in the fourth quarter. And, you know, it's like you almost, there's so many different songs that can go with that. I mean, you almost want to play Cold Blooded because, I mean, here she was, fifth broken nose in her career. After the game, she's doing the interview and there's blood there and around the nose. And she got hot. 4 for 5 from the 3-point line in the fourth quarter. Incredible. And so what looked to be slipping away, they get off to the 2-0 lead with the Phoenix Mercury. And, it's 2-0 lead for the Storm. And then, of course, then you get the two games and they come back. And here it is. I mean, they're leading most of the game and all that. And Sue Bird literally lifted this team and took it into the championship. 94-84 win, you know, a 10-point win in a game that, you know, the Storm were struggling. They just couldn't get the final things going, but that's great. And so now the Storm begin the finals of the WNBA at home at 6 p.m. against the Washington Mystics. But again, Sue Bird, you know, probably not as appreciated as she should be for an absolute treasure in this town. I think that she'll go down as one of the great athletes and one of the great sports participants in this town. I mean, Sue Bird, congratulations. But wow, I mean, I love the line. I think Ray Ratto down in San Francisco said it the best. It's like, here's Sue Bird. She's out there, you know, shooting, probably sipping on some whiskey and doing this stuff, just being tough. I mean, she toughed it out. And boy, what a phenomenal thing. Hey, MVP type of performance in a great, great game. Congratulations. Storm.
Number three.
Things happen in clubhouse. You're talking about, you know, 25, or in this case now 35, the most competitive guys you're ever going to be around. And, you know, they spend, you know, basically every waking moment seems like together all the time. So I've been on a number of different teams. It's something that you will see at some point. You know, our guys are working through the situation. And, you know, the thing is, we need to be professional and we'll get ready to play the game tonight. But, it's unfortunate, but it's something that it happens. You know, it's part of the game. You have very competitive people that, you know, they want to win.
I guess you guys, we're taking you around to Diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. I guess you could say there's still a fight with this club, but it's not supposed to be that way. A little bit of a skirmish in the clubhouse. They had to close the doors. D. Gordon came over, and Ryan Divish reported the fight was between D. Gordon and Mariner shortstop Gene Segura over Gordon missing an easy pop fly in the previous night's game, and so that's not good. But again, these things happen. The bigger thing I think you worry about is the fact that, two, the Mariners lost to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3. This is after last week getting swept by the Padres, and now the crowd's turning against them in the sense that they weren't showing up. 11,265 at the game. That's a little scary. And again, the pitching staff did their thing. I mean, Wade LeBlanc comes out, gets 6 scoreless innings, pitched 68 pitches, then they went to the bullpen, and then all of a sudden, the bullpen gives up 4 runs. That's not good. I mean, it's like that's a problem. So in the end, the Mariners lose this game, and they just really struggle now, and you start to say the clock is ticking, and they need to sweep series against losing teams. I mean, I guess the good thing is there's more losing teams that they face down the stretch than winning teams, but this is a game that they need to win. So, update right now, Marco Gonzalez is having a bullpen session tomorrow. See when he can return. Mike Leake's scheduled to start on today going against Andrew Kashner, and that's around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number four.
And then it's real frustrating on the same hand just because it was, like we said after the game, it was a lot of sloppiness that you think you're going to clean up. And you know, we do a run a play one time and it looks great, and then the next, you know, you run the next series and it's, you know, looks completely different. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of frustration on all of our parts on those type of things.
And so that's Chris Peterson talking about the Huskies and the loss to Auburn, and they dropped six spots, which isn't bad. I mean, because, again, figuring they're going to turn this thing around and start getting some wins, and that's in the Associated Press Bowl. So they go from six to nine, three spots, and other Pac-12 teams ranked in there. USC ranked 17, Oregon 23. That was a big setback for the Pac-12 in the sense that the Huskies couldn't get the win, but they played hard, they played physical, just didn't win the game. Now they come up against North Dakota. Game is going to be at 2 p.m. coming up for the Pac-12 Network. No update on Trey Adams, but he's got that bad back, and you know right now things don't look good for him being able to come back. In fact, even Chris Peterson said he hasn't even spoken to Trey or his parents yet, but that could be some tough news. So in the end, it's like that's a big injury with Trey being the left tackle, but we'll see how quickly he can come back if he can this year.
Number five.
Let me start with this question. Has Earl Thomas been disrespected?
In my opinion, no. He thinks he has. He's not gotten his deal. In my opinion, I want to see Earl play this year. And with his age and with some of the injury history the last three seasons, I'm paying him $8.5 million. What, top five safety money in the league? In my opinion, he has not been disrespected. And I think he was told very clearly from day one, we're not doing an extension.
And that's, of course, revisiting the big story of the morning. Earl Thomas is going to report. He's now had Ian Rappaport saying they got the word from Earl that he will be here at the Seahawks facility probably today, ending that holdout. And, now we'll see where it goes. I mean, I still think that this now continues to open the door for trade. And if Adam Schefter is correct in the idea that the Cowboys have offered a second round pick, then, you know, like any other negotiation, you just come back and you make a couple adjustments and you get the deal done. I think that Earl has made it clear that, being in Seattle is not his preference. He feels disrespected. And again, how a player feels is how a player feels. I mean, whether it's right or wrong, it's like I can't go into the head of Earl Thomas and say he's wrong in saying that. I think what he made the mistake is holding out as long as he did. But again, if it actually gets what he wants and gets the trade to Dallas, then I guess it's okay because he can get a big contract and all those different things. So Earl Thomas, keep you updated as this day goes on. Very important day for the Seahawks, important day for Earl Thomas. Hey, listen to my show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to go under further review. We're working on a lot of different things right now on the Earl Thomas front. We'll get back to you on that. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And in under further review, what we do is go ahead and kind of review the big news of the day. And of course, the big news is the return of Earl Thomas. Okay, so what does that mean in the big picture? I mean, certainly you'd love to be able to have Earl Thomas that wants to be with this team. And again, now he has the chance to express that to his teammates. And you know the guys like Bobby Wagner and you know guys like KJ Wright definitely want him on board. But now the question is, as much time as he's missed and as much of a distraction this as can be, and you can see with his statement that with Ian Rappaport that he feels disrespected by the negotiation. I don't necessarily agree with that, but what I do think is end up happening is that he's put himself in a position to get traded. And if that's what's his mission was, well, I think that maybe he can accomplish it. Now, the question is going to be, will the Seahawks hold on the idea of trying to get a number one pick? Adam Schefter is reporting that the Cowboys have offered a second round pick, and it makes sense. I mean, you're talking about a team right now that's one of the youngest, if not the youngest in football. They could use an Earl Thomas at safety. They've got two injured safeties, one that may not be able to play this weekend, and so why not? Why not try to find a way to accommodate a deal? But also, I mean, you're making a point. And of course, if you're Pete Carroll and you're John Snyder, I mean, what you don't want to do is set precedent in the sense that, oh, here's a way that, you can do this if you want to get off the team. But you would have to think the painful way that Earl did this is one that you got to make him sweat as much as you can. Because what you witnessed was, he's going to lose about $1.5 million. I mean, he's going to lose the $427 of proration. You can do that and all that, but everything else is one where I think that this is one. And I know on Brock and Salk, Brock Hewitt has his opinion on the Earl Thomas holdout.
Okay, and here's my little list.
Okay.
Earl Thomas is nuts, okay, in every awesome way imaginable. He's different. He's nuts. And I think that tweet of disrespecting everything plays to some of that. Number two, you flushed just about every bit of crazy out of this locker room, and you can deal with one. You could deal back in the day with one. You flushed everything else out of there. And I know this for a fact. I have seen it and witnessed it myself. This is not any secondhand info. Earl is one that keeps to himself. He is not one that is going to stir it up. He's not one that holds court. At least in his past, he's done none of that. Earl is one that has kept to himself as much as any other player out there. It's why, like, oh, he's the voice of the team. He's the captain of this. No, he's not. Nope, he's not. He is one heck of a player. He is one wired individual unlike anybody else, but he largely keeps to himself. So these are all kind of in the positive area of this news. Number three, I love incentivization. I love it when guys are totally and completely incentivized to go out there and ball. Frank, you get $1 million a sack. Go get them. Earl, you want to still prove you can play with all these other free agents to be in the safety market? Go out and be an all-pro, and you will go get yours. Never going to make up the $1 million, and I'm not buying this fine money was washed away. I'm just not. I don't think that's the way that the Seahawks have done business in the past, and I don't think it is the way they're doing business here. And then lastly, most positively, there's no margin. You don't want to buy in. You don't want to do this. Then you know what? We don't need you. We'll move on with Tedrick, and we'll move on with these other people just as we have the last 5 weeks. And how has that felt?
Yeah, I think Brock also brings up a point that's kind of slipped under the radar from what he said is, you know, what Earl means in the locker room. Now, what Earl means on the field is huge. I mean, you can argue as great as Richard Sherman has been, as great as Bobby Wagner has been. I mean, you can make the argument as a scheme that, you know, Earl Thomas makes everything right. And, you know, he does. But as he brings up and he kind of alluded to it, he's not a leader in the locker room. He's very much to himself. He's very intense. It's one of the reasons why he might be the most valuable defensive player, you know, for this team through the years he was here. But, you know, it's one where, you know, he's going to try to concentrate on getting the best for himself as far as what he does on the field. And that's what makes him so good. I mean, that's why he's a Hall of Fame possibility as long as his career continues. And so, you know, what you get in the locker room may not be much. What you get on the field is a lot. And I think that, you know, with Chris Richard down there in Dallas, I think that you can see that, you know, you put him in the position to be, you know, cover one, cover three. Now, again, there's a cover two defense, and so I can be interested to see how Rod Marinelli, the defensive coordinator, is going to try to adjust to that if they would make the trade. But I think what you look at here in this locker room needs leadership. This is one young team. Doug Baldwin said it probably the best the other day. What do you think of this team? It's going to take time. And it's going to take time to try to get that defense together. I think they're more advanced right now where they are on offense, which is, of course, kind of bold for me to say that when you look at the fact that, you know, they had such bad offensive running and blocking in the last 2 years. But I think you can see better blocking right now, better running right now, and I think a better offense right now. The offense has to carry the defense. So now the question, if you're going to be for Seattle, is that how do you feel about the safety position now that Earl's back? Yeah, you can put him out there. He can play, and he's going to give a high level. But, I mean, Tedrick Thompson, I think, has done enough to earn the job if Earl's not on the roster. And if you're, you know, if you're going to be Earl, has he done enough to try to help the team out? I think the one thing I know that, you know, he's kept in touch with some of the safeties and offered advice and things like that. That's encouraging. But again, Earl's what he does on the field Sundays, not as much of what he was on the field. But again, it's not detrimental. It's not negative. It's just one of the realities of Earl Thomas. Because he is so focused on getting the best he can play, that's what he does, and he does it so well. But honestly, to me, you can just see this is now a negotiation for trade. If indeed, and again, I'm not questioning Adam Schefter one bit. I think it was interesting that, you know, here it was that yesterday the talk was the Cowboys offered a third. Now today the Cowboys offered a second. That shows you the Cowboys now want him. They can fit him into their payroll. And so make the trade. I mean, you gave up a second round pick right now last year for the 2019 season in the Dwayne Brown trade. You can recoup that. And again, you lose a great player. They're not as good without Earl Thomas, but also they can still do well without Earl Thomas. I was talking about it this morning on Brock and Salk, and I was glad to see that Brock agreed, because where you look nationally, everybody thinks this team's going to give up a lot more points on defense. I think they give up 23 points. It was kind of what they did in the final seven games last year. And again, in the NFC, you're going to give up a few more points because there's so many good quarterbacks. But in the end, what I like is that you're going to go young. You don't want distractions. And again, you have an asset. The asset is Earl Thomas. He wants out most likely. Let him go. Move on. I know that's going to be controversial for the fans. Some like, some don't like. He's such a great player. You'd like to see him stay, but under the right terms. And I think right now he's not here under the right terms, because he wants to be moved to the Dallas Cowboys. There's now a way to do it. A strong offer has been made. Maybe it's not perfect, but hey, that's negotiations. You try to wipe something out. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we'll get to the bottom of what happened in the clubhouse with the Mariners, what's happening on the field with the Mariners. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And Shannon, I mean, through the years, how many times have you've seen closed clubhouses and all that stuff, but have you ever seen one? I mean, I know you've seen that has been worse, but how weird was yesterday with the clubhouse incident that happened, D. Gordon Shepherd being polite and trying to shepherd everybody away from the media outside? That one had to be a weird one.
It was definitely a weird sight, but I would say this. I mean, the clubhouse scuffles and skirmishes, you hear about them. You hear about them almost every year. They happen quite a bit, just not at the time that this one did. It's from what I hear, it's usually either right after a game before the media gets into the clubhouse, and you really don't usually hear about those until way after and don't even see evidence of them when you walk into the clubhouse. You're pretty unsuspecting. Or after the media has left after the game and after their media session post game. So to have one pregame, I think that's a little bit more rare. So it was definitely an odd sight, but there are a lot of frustrations over there. This is a rough season. It's been a very disappointing second half after what they did in the first half. And I think, it's not something that's totally out of the ordinary and not a total surprise that it happened, just to have that it happened when it did.
Now, I know that Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times is reporting that this may go back to the previous night's game, where I guess it was a bad play by D. Gordon and Gene Segura got into it. I don't know if you can confirm or have any idea, but before you even think about that, it's like, how was D in trying to get everybody out of there? Because it seemed like, as things were kind of messed up, I guess, as far as maybe relationships and all that stuff, he seemed to be pretty good in getting everybody outside.
Well, and that is, what you do. It's they keep everything in the clubhouse. What happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse is the absolute golden rule in all of baseball. And when he did something like that, I think there was a thought that it was, oh, they're going to have a players meeting. So there wasn't really even any indication that this was something that was heated. You see this, it was like, okay, well, it's a little bit odd, but not really. You've seen that before where it's like, hey, guys, can you get out for a couple minutes? We need to talk. But then things got loud, and that's when things got, definitely different than what you would normally see in a pregame situation. And again, something that I think normally happens after games. So I kind of sensed that something was going on the night before, but I wasn't absolutely sure. You saw kind of different guys in different corners of the clubhouse, but it wasn't to the point where it was anything alarming. So I think maybe there was some grumbling about something the night before, and my guess would be that if it was Gene and if it was Dee, and I kind of heard the same thing yesterday a little bit later in the day, I think it was probably a matter of just one maybe quipping or just giving one the wrong look or something like that, and because of the frustrations that folks have in the season right now, it just kind of boiled over. Again, not out of the ordinary. When Scott Service talked about it with Rick Riz, he said, we're a family. These things happen in families. When you spend that much time together and you're that close-knit, every now and then you're going to have a little bit of that. And I think that you can understand with where they're at right now and the frustrations that they've had and the disappointment that must be there. They do their best to put on the brave face every night and, you know, say, hey, well, we just have to win every game right now. But when you think about how they were playing for the first 3 months of the season, that's got to make this that much tougher to stomach for them. And so I think that emotions can get a little bit higher at that point. I don't think this is anything that's going to linger. I think that this is something that, you know, Scott Servais will get a little bit further into. And the way he'll do that is by, you know, having that office door open and having conversations with people. I think you saw a couple of players try and, you know, talk to if there were sides. I think you saw Kyle Seager kind of talking to both kind of parties that were involved during batting practice, going around the infield and doing that. So I think that it will be taken care of. I think they will move on. But again, it's really not hard to see how this could happen with what's been going on for the past month and a half for them.
Well, in fact, I mean, again, it's easy for me to say from afar that I'm not surprised. And again, I think this is considered to be a minor scuffle, and minor being the key word here. So again,
absolutely.
It's not like not anybody got hurt or anything like that. But I mean, you kind of sense with some of the things that have been kind of the vibe, because I mean, I know there was some at least quoted frustration a little bit about Gene Segura, the paternity leave, an extra time away, and, you know, different things like that. And so when you start to hear that little grumble, and again, these are minors, like, you know, his wife's having a baby. I mean, he needs to be there. And so there's no problem with that, but it seemed like it took a little extra day or two, and there seemed to be a little frustration with that, a little frustration maybe with Gene and all that. When you start to hear those little tales, not that anything points to Gene or anything points to Dee or anybody like that, but you can see, this is where the frustration sets in, and then it kind of, you know, takes one step to the worst, maybe as games and losses happen.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get into the reasons why, because we don't know for sure. We just know that the two players, it does appear that those were the two that were at the bottom of the pile of the scrum, and you know, what was instigated there. But I think that there are a lot of things, and I'm not even sure it's necessarily the paternity leave, because you can look back and Kyle Seager took 3 days too, and that's what they're allowed to take. That's something that was collectively bargained in the agreement with baseball. So I think that, again, you know, just knowing you brought up the situation where, you know, Dee dropped a ball the night before, and, you know, perhaps maybe there was a little comment that was made about that. And it wasn't, you know, accusatory. It was probably, you know, just normal clubhouse stuff, that perhaps that was taken wrong, or perhaps, you know, a comment was made about something that Gene had done at some point. I think it was probably more along those lines. Gene could be very aloof, and that's just his demeanor. And maybe, you know, he did something in his demeanor, rubbed Gordon the wrong way. I don't know. But, you know, the point is, A, you were right. I think this was a very small thing. I think it was something that was very much in the moment over, you know, if this makes sense, over perhaps, you know, 12 hours and the night before, and just kind of how everything had built up. And mostly just reflective and just kind of getting it out. Wow, guys, look what happened. You know, look where we were. We were 11 games up. We were on top of the world. We were filling up this stadium, you know, night after night. And there was a lot of excitement, and we were, you know, a playoff bound. And now we're having a hard time scoring runs. And now we're having a hard time getting the ball to the eighth inning right now. And everything's a struggle. When you look around, you see other teams taking off. When you're going in the other direction, when I think you had probably set an expectation that was fair based on the play that you saw, that you were in the middle of, I think that that just, you know, was probably brought out things that you would easily just kind of brush off in any other situation. And I think that's probably what we saw yesterday, and I don't think it's going to be an issue going forward.
No. And of course, go back to last night. Wade LeBlanc really pitched well again. He goes in six innings, 68 pitches, and you know, they went to the bullpen, which, of course, I guess that's not of a surprise. But again, he might have been able to extend to the seventh. I mean, thoughts on, you know, how that went with Wade?
I've got a few different thoughts on that. Wade, there are a lot of outings where we have seen him go through the lineup twice and they pull him out. And sometimes it's not a matter of pitches. It's a matter of ups and downs and how many times you have gone through the lineup. And I, you know, in Scott Service's comments last night, they were getting to the middle of the lineup, and those guys had hit him well. They didn't get the hits off of him, but they put some good at bats. They put some good swings on him. Things that, you know, coaches and pitching coaches and associate pitching coaches and everybody they have down there, catchers, are watching. That it just isn't as easy to see if you're watching the TV and you're watching your game day and seeing that it's just 68 pitches. I think they had, from what they had seen earlier in the game, a feeling that, you know, they might get to him in this inning. I also think that it is, and we've seen them do that a lot with Wade this year, and while some people will look at that and say, well, you can get a lot more out of him, I think maybe the answer is more he's had the success because they've done that. They haven't let him get hit later in games when he gets upper pitch count. He threw 98 pitches and 92 pitches in the outings before. And I think that when I saw him come out of the game, there were a lot of handshakes and smiles and conversations in the dugout after. And it had the looks to me that he knew he was coming out of the game when he was coming out of the game. And I think he may have been on some sort of pitch count. You know, Wade LeBlanc is a guy that threw 68 innings last year, was a reliever for the past 8 years before that. This is his first full year, or almost full year, of starting. He is way up in the innings right now. And I think that, and he also has got some of those dings and dents that nobody knows about this time of the year that everybody accumulates, that I think that there's been a conscious decision that they're going to protect him a little bit with where they're at right now. So I think that decision was something that was half predetermined before the game. This is where we'd like to get him. Also, with what they were seeing with their eyes in the at-bats, and also with where he's at in his season. And also, they're trying to get that seventh inning thing going. It's clearly not working. It's what Scott Service has right now. You can't push every pitcher, every starter straight to the eighth inning. That's not going to work. So he's going to the arms that he has got that are supposed to get him or get the ball to Edwin Diaz and Colome, and that's just not happening.
No. Hey, Shannon, thank you as always. And, hey, just tonight, if anything happens with a scuffle with among the media, you know, go rescue my guy Divish and make sure you pull him from under the pile.
He'll be just fine.
I know he will be, as you will be. Hey, Shannon Dreher, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline.
All right.
You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, Behind the Lines, of course, the big story of the day, the return of Earl Thomas. What's it mean? It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, we go behind the lines here at 10:45 each day. And, of course, the big story is Earl Thomas coming in. But tell you what we want to do is that we're going to concentrate on this in this segment. We want your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN and 206-421-ESPN. What do you do now that Earl is reporting? Do you give him a contract extension? Do you play him on Sunday or keep him on the exempt list? If he's going to be active, do you start Tedrick Thompson? What do you do? Or do you trade him now if Adam Schefter reporting that the Cowboys have offered a second-round pick? I want to get your reaction. And again, this is a tough decision now. And honestly, Earl has made this a tougher decision for what to do by showing up on a Wednesday before the start of a game on Sunday. Because at least now, you know, he can get in and have the possibility of being on the active roster. Or do you quickly try to turn it around and make it a trade? You got to find out what he thinks. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, you know, Mara, I'll ask you this because I kind of think, I know you maybe answer the phones right now, but it's like, hey, what's your thoughts are as far as, I think you trade him for the second round pick or you negotiate and get a little bit more, but you're not going to get much more than a second. I didn't know if anybody was going to go to the second, and the Cowboys have, you got a ball game for a trade. So, no, I think that's the one thing that I think, you know, you really have to consider, because this is going to be a possible distraction. I mean, you've got a good group now, a young group trying to work together. So I think that at this stage, you probably lean toward making the stay. Let's go to David in South Prairie. David, what's your thoughts on the Earl Thomas situation?
Well, hey, John, I know I talk to you a lot, but yeah. I think the Seahawks played this exactly how they played, needed to play it. Because they're not just sending off to Earl Thomas. They're sending messages to the other 53 guys on this team that said, you know, if you come in and do the right thing, you work hard, you play hard, you're going to get what Tyler Lockett got. You pull what Cham Chancellor did and what Earl Thomas is, this is what you end up with. You know, with Earl, I don't understand what Earl was thinking. A limited market. He limited himself by saying he always wants to go to Dallas. He had no chips in this game, and he just lost out. And, yeah, he might be coming in disgruntled, but he's a player. I think he's going to play hard if he does stay, because players have pride, and he's auditioning for the other guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. Here, Ian Rappaport is reporting this, and to me this doesn't make much sense, but he's reporting that they're going to waive the fines.
Okay, no, now I don't see it.
You can't do it. No, if he's going to be on this team, I mean, you can't do waive that to him and you know, the camp, you know, have a camp chancellor pay the fines and everybody else that's held out pay the fines. I think you have to have the fines. Now, if you're waiving the fines with the idea of making that trade, well, then that might be okay. I still think you got to collect something because, again, you know, you don't want everybody, you know, demanding to come in. It's like, I'm going to hold out and, you know, get away with it. But if it's going to lead to a trade, okay, fine. Because, again, nobody does anything until you get here. And
yeah,
you get,
I think so. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I wouldn't waive the fines. He had no leverage to waive the fines, unlike Aaron Donald and Mac and Steph, where they're coming off their second contracts. Earl didn't have any has any leverage in this
yeah,
fight.
And, but again, he put himself in a position where he lost the leverage by tipping off that he was thinking about holding out at the Pro Bowl, you know, by doing the thing where he runs over to Dallas and tells Jason Garrett to come get him, and then to come back and make the bold statement that it's like, I'm holding out and I'm not coming in unless you trade me.
Yeah, and see, like I said, he had no chips in this game, but I think Seattle played it just right. They couldn't give him what he wants because I don't think they were talking to Earl. I think they were talking to the other 53 guys. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, we got to shoot a hostage. Because if we make this, give him what he wants, we're just going to be held hostage by everybody on this team.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. David, thank you for the phone call. Yeah, I just think that you know, you've got to, you know, take the precedent. And, again, he's the one that initiated the action. He's the one. Because think about this. I mean, KJ Wright's no different than Earl Thomas. Pro Bowl player in the last year of his contract. He was here. He was giving leadership to his teammates and all those different things. And now, I mean, you know, if you do something like wave the things to Earl Thomas, are you being fair to KJ Wright, who's done everything you would want as a Seahawk leader? Let's go to Joe in Toledo. Hey, Joe.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I appreciate your point of view, obviously. I just think there's zero chance that Earl can get traded for a second-round pick, I think for a few different reasons. Well, one, the Seahawks have been pretty consistent with what value they placed on him, both with Earl and not budging what they said they're going to do, and then with the league saying that they want the first-round picks. So that's just one side of it. But also, I don't think anybody denies that this year, Earl Thomas is going to be playing at his absolute best. He's going to turn 30, and he's looking for a contract that's going to be able to sustain him for a while. So mm-hmm. He has to perform on the field, and nobody doubts that he can do that. So you're saying that a second-round pick is more valuable than the best safety in the league playing at his best, plus what tutelage value there is for the incumbent players like Tedrick Thompson, you know, in a year of being with Earl on the field, and what value that is. You're basically saying that Kristen Michael, you know, a second-round pick from the Seahawks, is as valuable as that single year of the best safety playing his best and giving whatever he has left in his tutelage to the other players. I just can't see that happening.
Yeah, but again, it's like it's only going to be a one-year situation because what do you think the chances are of him getting a long-term contract? I would say nil.
Well, but what if he does come back and he is blowing everything away? You don't think the Seahawks could extend him mid-season?
They could, after, yeah. I've said this all along. You can't do anything with Earl Thomas until you're with him for 2 months. And when you're with him for 2 months and he shows he wants to be here, different ball game. Now he's missed.
Well, I agree.
And it's like, but he has to show to the team and show, not to the team, he hasn't proved anything to the Seahawks team and Seahawks players.
Would you say that the risk, the gamble, the opportunity the Seahawks might have in waiting this 2 months out, seeing him buy into the system and just be out there totally going crazy and able to extend him, mm-hmm. isn't that gamble worth more than
Could
a
be.
Second round pick?
Could be, yeah. But also, too, you lose him if he's not going to be all in. You want all in. I mean, you know, say what you want about the Michael Bennett thing, the Richard Sherman thing. You know, Pete Carroll, right or wrong, didn't think he was all in, both those players. And now you have to see it. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's go to David in Bonnie Lake. Hey, David.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, two things. I definitely think we should trade him. I'm kind of on that side of the Seahawks fans where it's like, you know, a clean house, get some new players in, give them a chance to go. I'd take the second round pick just to get some kind of value out of it. And then second, I wanted to see your comments or hear your comments on kind of his remarks to the whole thing. It sounds like he said the Seahawks disrespected him. Sounds more like Dallas disrespected him by only offering a second round pick. And then do you know any player in the NFL that was like, hey, send me to my favorite team? And then the GM said, sure, no problem. I don't care about the team. Just let's make you happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I don't think they're necessarily trying to make Earl happy, but I think they're trying to resolve a problem. I mean, the problem is Earl elected to hold out. He's elected to withhold his services. He was not there to help in the leadership transition from this team. And again, that's not his game. His game is playing. That's what he does. And he does it so well, and he concentrates and all that stuff. He's not a locker room leader. He's a leader on the field. And that's still very, very valuable. And he plays at the highest level you can possibly play for a safety. You love his speed. You love his tenacity. And all that. But if it's going to be a one-year thing, which is, I think, going to be the case, you've got to look at that. Hey, Dwayne Brown, he'll held out because he didn't want to be right. A Houston Texan. You know, they end up getting a second-round pick and a little bit more for that, what really might have turned out to be a second and third because of the injury to Jeremy Lane, who, by the way, still doesn't have a job. That's kind of weird. But it's like, yeah, but overall, I think that, you know, I think you have to determine, you know, you got to determine it this week or so. Because if the offer for a second-round pick is there, you may make it. And again, I still think that you've got to collect the money. You can't reward the holdout. And again, if it's a matter, it's like, oh, we're rewarding the trade. Well, hey, you get a value and you move on.
Yeah, I get the whole Tiger can't change his stripes thing. I just don't see that happening for him this year. I think he's going to get on the field and still be a little bit, I guess, a little bit hurt by the Seahawks and maybe not be that leader that you need him to be. He might be spreading some bad messages to the other players, things like that. I just think we should get rid of him.
Yeah, and again, it's like I hate it because he's such a great player. Thank you for the phone call, and thank you for the phone calls. But I think what in the end, what you've got to determine is, because again, you know, you got to understand Earl Thomas. What he thinks today is going to be thought different the next day, and it's going to be thought different the next day. I mean, he goes by the seat of his pants as far as his emotions and all that, what he says. But one thing you know, when he's on the field, he'll give you everything. Hey, well, every Wednesday we go with Washington Wednesday, and so today from the Pac-12 Network, get a chance to catch up with somebody from the Pitts, but went to Pitt. You gotta like that. Yogi Roth joins us next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.